Welcome to the Cool Explorations podcast and radio program with your host, Tony Peters. I hope you'll enjoy today's segment. Welcome back to another episode of Cool Explorations. Today on the podcast, we are blessed to have Tina Young on the podcast. She has written a book on forensic science, which is pretty cool. She also teaches it. So without further ado, why don't you just let us know who you are and what you're currently doing?
Hi, Tony. Thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be here. And so my name is Tina Young, as you just said. I used to work as a crime scene specialist many years ago for here in Southern California. And I went out to crime scenes for the National City Police Department and the Chula Vista Police Department. I met my current husband in law enforcement, and we had our son, who's now a United States Marine. And once that baby was born, we both realized we couldn't be on call. He was on the narcotics task force and I was out processing homicide scenes, and we realized somebody's got to take care of this baby. So I left the on-call lifestyle, stayed home with the baby. Prior to working crime scenes, I used to be a police dispatcher. So I actually went back to police dispatching part-time at night and on the weekends. And I started teaching one class at Grossmont College. It's a community college here in San Diego County, and they have a forensic technology program that's been around for 60 years. Prior to anybody even knowing really what forensics was, they were around, and it's a hands-on technical program that has grown over the years. So I was teaching one class, taking care of our baby, you know, and my husband was working a lot of overtime, and then did that for a couple of years. And our son went to preschool, started kindergarten, and then CSI came on TV. And a lot of people are familiar with CSI, but all of a sudden our forensic technology program really grew exponentially. And there was a need for a full-time faculty member. And I was really nervous. I didn't know if I could really photography and teach forensic technology and all the different aspects that a full-time faculty member would have to do. I knew how to do the job, but, you know, translating that into teaching, I wasn't sure, but I prayed about it, and God did open the doors that I ended up, and just have been blessed to be there. I thought I had walked away from casework, walked away from anything related to criminal investigations, but I realized in the time that I worked as a crime scene specialist, I found a niche in bloodstain pattern analysis, which is really a discipline in forensics that a lot of people might think is bizarre because you're dealing with extremely violent crime and you're looking at horrific things, but it's a different part of your brain. You're not really dwelling on the horror of it. It's horrific, bloodstain analysis, but different part of your brain. It's analytical, where you're actually analyzing what happened, piecing it together. And so probably I would say my first year in training in crime scene specialist work, I took my first bloodstain pattern analysis course and really enjoyed it a lot. And kind of developed a niche in that. So the reason I bring that up is because while I was teaching, I looked back at all of the education and training I had had in bloodstain pattern analysis, and I realized I could actually get certified. And so I decided to pursue that certification in 2011 and became certified as a bloodstain pattern analyst, which allowed me to do private casework either for the prosecution or the defense. And so I've been doing casework along with teaching since 2007, but in 2015 is when I started getting Los Angeles County cases. And so private casework really grew quite a bit for me. So now I average probably 3 or 4 bloodstain pattern cases a year, and probably turn down more cases than what I take, because unfortunately Los Angeles County has a lot of violent crime. And I'm really encouraging a lot of forensic professionals to pursue bloodstain pattern analysis. It's a discipline that you really have to do a lot of training and to have a lot of, I would say, mentoring and collaboration and sharing of knowledge to grow in it. And I'm trying to encourage a lot of people to do that. A lot of my students, a lot of the newer forensic technicians, crime scene specialists, as well as forensic scientists and criminalists to keep that discipline growing. So that's kind of what I do. And writing is also something that's kind of been a part of my life. But that's the forensics part and bloodstain pattern analysis part of my life.
Yeah, so I imagine you have to do a lot of compartmentalization inside your brain just to kind of protect yourself from falling into that, like.
I pray a lot about that, and I guess I've always had a fear of at what point is my brain going to snap? I mean, it's like at what point or does your brain go, okay, that's it, overload, you can't see anymore. But what I believe, and I have prayed a lot about it, I believe that God designs each of us very differently, and we definitely need people, ethical people in every industry, and that includes death investigations and, seeing these things and ensuring that the right people go to jail and the innocent people don't. It's very important that we get it right.
We God designed some of us to be rational and analytical in their thinking, and that's just one way, I guess, that God, he had to know that that was going to come up when sin entered the world. He was like, okay, this is going to be a thing, so he designed us accordingly.
Cain and Abel, first bloodstain pattern
And
court
I
case.
do have to thank both you and your husband for your service, as well as your son. I think
Oh,
that is
thank you.
fantastic. All of you in uniforms of a certain type, and I think that that is just fantastic. We need so many people like that, sadly, for this world
Thank
that we
you,
live in.
Tony.
And you guys put in a lot of long hours, because I know police and these forensics people, I know hours is definitely something that they put in. Sadly, it's a
Yeah,
need.
that's true. And it really depends on what's going on. My husband just retired as assistant police chief for the National City Police Department, which is in San Diego County. And his career has been amazing. I think he could write a book, and he's just really, and I could say I'm biased because I'm his wife of 24 years. We've been married, but he is absolutely the best cop I've ever met. My brother's a great cop too, but he's had a great law enforcement career. He's also an amazing leader. And 2020 was a really rough year. He's had different rough years, but that was a 12 on, 12 off shift for everybody in law enforcement, 12 hours on, 12 hours off every day for months and months and months and months. In San Diego County, it actually wasn't as bad as other parts of the country. But yeah, I've seen the hours for sure. And my son, he's a crew chief on the Osprey and just got off deployment, and they were doing 14-hour days every day.
Oh,
So
wow.
the hours are extensive. For teaching, it's a lot easier for teaching. Crime scenes, though, yeah, you process a crime scene until it's done, and maybe get a little bit of sleep if you have a if you work for an agency that has a motor home that you can go in, take a nap, and then get back to it. So,
Well, I know with a lot of
but
that crime stuff, you're on a time crunch too, because
yeah,
like evidence could get washed away, evidence can get
exactly.
destroyed, so you got to
Right.
get it done.
Depending on where you work, especially if you're working in an area that has bad weather, right? San Diego County, we're pretty lucky with weather. We get more wind, Santa Ana winds, and of course fire, more so we don't get snow. So we don't have to worry about it snowing on our crime scenes or anything, but
So I know that that's crazy, and I know for your students, CSI is probably a shocker when they go into class and they're like, oh, it's not actually like CSI.
I think now, when CSI was on TV, we had our wait list was unbelievable. I was teaching summer classes day, night. I teach day and night now too. Our forensics program is not online. All of it is hands-on. And but we had our classroom maxes at 30 students in order to, and that's kind of big, but we had 40 on the wait list, sometimes 50 for one class when CSI came on TV. And there wasn't enough jobs for that many students. Now I feel like our enrollment in all across California, probably across the United States, enrollment in colleges has gone down. In California, it has. And again, this is a community college, which, by the way, I think community colleges do not get enough attention as being an affordable education with fantastic faculty across the nation. Community colleges have wonderful faculty. Pretty much all of them have done the job that they teach, and the class sizes are smaller. The education is affordable. So I really think students who go to community college are getting a great education, and I don't think we really share that enough. But, and I don't even know why I went off on that tangent other than, oh, our class sizes,
I think
class
universities
sizes,
and
yes.
colleges are overpriced, honestly, to me.
Yeah,
I think
community
it's
college is
ridiculous.
much, much better, but the class sizes are better now for the number of jobs there are. That's what the point I was trying to make, that I
I know it's
went off on
worse
a
in the
tangent.
US. In the US, cost-wise, it is way worse than it is in Canada. I still think ours in Canada are expensive too, but it's ridiculous that people have to spend decades paying off a student loan.
I know.
My wife and I thankfully got ours paid off about 5 years ago.
Yeah,
Now
me too.
we're 3 years from paying off our house, and
Wonderful.
which is good because housing prices are ridiculous right now.
It's not a time you want to be in
So
debt, that's for sure.
no,
Yeah,
so
all of
we're
us
looking
are.
forward to that time because it'll ease things up a little bit because money's tight. I'm on disability, so money is very, very tight. We're relying on my
Definitely.
wife's income because disability, people may think it pays well. It does not pay well.
No.
It is about 30% of your original income, so
Yeah.
it's not good.
Yeah, and the price of things are ridiculous in America and Canada that it's time to really focus on paying off debt, right?
And groceries keep going up. So why don't we get a little bit more into your testimony? How did you come to know the Lord? And how has the Lord kind of worked at different points in your life?
So my mom and dad raised me to know Jesus. I have an older sister and a younger brother and a younger sister. I'm number two of four. And I really realize I grew up in Ohio, in a farm community, Ohio, and my parents just love Jesus. And my dad, we were going to a four square gospel church in a farm community, central Ohio, and the pastor had left. And this is my recollection as a child. The pastor had left, and so the congregation voted for my dad to be interim pastor until they can find a permanent pastor. And that ended up lasting for several years. And so I always just felt the Holy Spirit. I've always felt the Lord with me. I thought about what I would say to you when you asked me about my testimony, because, and I decided to use an analogy for my childhood. At when I was in third grade, a lot of things changed in our family. And I'm going to use the analogy of our family being a ship. And my mother took the helm of the ship. She became the captain of the ship. And basically, there was, from I would say third grade on, that ship was in trouble, and it was sinking. And by the time I turned, my dad left the ministry completely, and started his own business. But by the time I was 18 years old, almost 19, I got into a lifeboat and got away as far away from the ship as I could. And that's the analogy that I'm using. And that is took me out to California. So California is about as far away from Ohio as you can get, I think, in America. So I kind of use the analogy of jumping on a lifeboat and going away. And but that doesn't mean I cut off. I love my siblings and my parents, but I was the first to abandon ship. And then a few years later, kind of one after the other, my dad had to, and then my younger brother and sister joined the Air Force. And my older sister, she got married at a very young age. So one by one, and now I would say, as far as that family, that nuclear family, original family, the ship has sunk. But we're all still love each other. We all have our own stories that are different because we all had to abandon ship in a different way. But we all love each other and are still in contact with each other. But quite honestly, I can't tell someone else's story on how they abandoned the ship. I can only tell mine, and that's pretty much all I'm going to say about that. But I am very close to my siblings. All of us love Jesus. All of us do, and we all have followed Jesus. And that pain of abandoning that family ship, all of us dealt with it differently. And so, All of my family is still in Ohio, except for my little sister. She had joined the Air Force and then she married a man in the Army. So that's what brought me to California. And I ended up just trying to make a living. And at the time, San Diego County wasn't that expensive, but I made a living by being an administrative assistant downtown San Diego at a prestigious CPA firm. I tried coming back to Ohio at one point. And by the way, I did go to Ohio State University, go Buckeyes. And but I only went for a year and I always loved biology. So I always loved science. But during the whole abandoning the ship, getting in the lifeboat, heading to California thing, I couldn't afford my tuition. So, we were talking about the price of college. And at the time, you couldn't even get a student loan during that time unless you were independent on your own for 2 years. So I could not go to
Wow.
college. I could not get a loan. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Now you can get a loan and you can go far into debt, right? Maybe
And
it was a blessing I
your
couldn't.
parents sign for it as well. They co-sign, which
They
is,
couldn't qual we couldn't qualify. So there wasn't a loan
jeez.
I could qualify for. So I had to, at the time, give up on my education temporarily and work full time. So I came to California again. I was 19. I actually had married my high school boyfriend who was in the Navy. So it was the Navy that brought me out to San Diego. That marriage wouldn't last. We never had children together, but I was working, doing kind of administrative assistant roles, and we ended up divorced. I went back to Ohio not for very long and realized San Diego's, I'm going back to San Diego. So I drove across country by myself and came back to San Diego. And I got into law enforcement because I could type really fast because I had done many administrative assistant jobs over the first in my early 20s. And there was a police dispatcher job that opened up. And that's how I got into law enforcement, was police dispatcher. I could type 85 words a minute. And then I realized OJ Simpson was on trial for murder. And that's where he had just been acquitted. And so forensics was on the all over the news and it really intrigued me. And I was working and at National City Police Department and we had a crime scene unit and I realized I really want to do that and I need to go back to school. So I had to make the decision, do I pursue a hard science biology degree? I need a full time. I just made the decision that I didn't think I wanted to put in 6 to 8 years, which I think is what it would have taken to do a hard science degree and work full time. So I went for a criminal justice bachelor's degree, and then I got a master's degree in forensic science. But in the meantime, moved into the crime scene unit and started processing crime scenes. So that's how I got into forensics. That's how I ended up in California from Ohio. And I guess I'll just tell you about how I ended up writing the book that I wrote.
Yep.
So I mentioned Liam is my only child, our only child. I met my husband Graham when I was a police dispatcher, and he was a slick sleeve police officer. Slick sleeve meaning there's no stripes on your uniform. So he was a baby cop, only had been a cop for a year when we met, and we actually fell absolute head over heels in love. It was one of the most powerful emotional experiences of my life, I would say, is falling in love with him. It was just really amazing. And I don't know if that's it's great if somebody ever gets to experience that. It's not one of those things that type of, emotion of falling in love. Obviously, it doesn't, your love develops over the years, right? You have marriage, you have good and bad times, but it is a pretty cool experience. Really, really falling in love with someone is just, pretty neat. And so we experienced that. But when I was pregnant for Liam, I realized this isn't going to work, both of us being on call. I knew that. And I prayed. So I was driving home from work one day and my stomach's getting bigger and bigger carrying this baby. And I prayed and I said, God, help me to figure out a way to be home with the baby, but us not to lose our house because we had just purchased a house like a year prior and we really needed my income. And I know it, I don't know if it sounded like a superficial prayer or not, but I said, that was my prayer. Help me to figure out how to be home with this baby, but not lose our house. And the words came in my mind, write a book. And I thought, write a book? What? I've never What? And then I prayed out loud, write a book. What would I write? That's what I said. What would I write? And then the story of this fiction novel that I wrote, Bailey McKenzie, started flooding my mind day and night. I couldn't keep up with the story. I had to get up in the middle of the night, write it down. I just started typing it out. And wow, it was rough, very rough. And that was almost, that was, I was pregnant for my son. He's now just turned 21 when I wrote the first draft. So I thought in my mind, aha, this is the answer. I'm going to write this fiction novel, and it's a fiction novel for teens. It's a forensics fiction novel for teenagers. And I thought, this is going to sell right away. Wow, God is awesome. Thank you for this, God. This book's going to get published right away. No, it took like almost 22 years. And then in the meantime, I did write a textbook, which is a forensic technology textbook. I was a contributing author for a couple of other forensic photography books, and I've written some journal articles. So my writing has been more technical than fiction, but I really believe to this day, I believe the Lord told me to write the book. So I believed he would, it's his timing. Of course, I wanted it to be faster, but I do still trust his timing. And I kept putting it out. I would say I've probably had 100 publishers turned me down over the last 20 years, but I've had at least a dozen editors give me free advice. They kept giving me free advice, and I don't know if editors normally do that. I don't know if that I'm lucky or obvious it was God, but they kept giving me not just free advice, but good advice, like here's what you really need to do. Boom, 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 boom. They would tell me, and then I'm like, all right, I'm just going to keep doing what all these editors are telling me to do until I get no more free advice and no more changes that I could make. And I don't know, maybe I'll eventually give up, but I really did believe that was what kept me persistent, is I really believed I had heard from God to write it. Now, what is he going to do with it? I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, but Dr. Samuel Lowry, he is the first person to say, I like this. I want to sign a contract with you. And he is the founder of Ambassador International. So he started that in Belfast, Ireland. And then he has a publishing company in South Carolina. And it was in January of 2021 that I sent it to him. Within a couple of weeks, I think he emailed me and said, I like this. Let's sign a contract. And I was like, what? And I actually had a secular, so it's a Christian publishing company, Ambassador International, but I had a secular company, a top editor also say, let's, I think I could get my executive board. I don't know. It was a big company. I think I could get them interested. So I prayed about it, and I really felt like the Lord said, go with Ambassador International. And I'm not saying, I just really believe whatever's going to happen with it, it's in the Lord's hands. That's what I believe. And so, Sarah Johnson, was my editor, and I really enjoyed working with her, and I really feel like she polished it up really, really well. And now we'll see what happens. I actually started writing two, and at first I thought, you know what, I'm going to wait and see how book one does, and then book two started flooding my mind like book one did. So I had book two sequel in my head, and I'm like, I gotta write it. And so I don't know. I really don't know what's gonna happen, but I really feel like I believe in the Lord. I believe in everything he does is for his purpose, and he's got a bigger plan than mine. So we'll see.
The publishing process is not a fun one. If anybody thinking about getting into writing, that process is not fun. I've experienced it myself. I've decided to go with self-publishing for the rest of my books because the first book when I got it published, even after that, the process was just was grueling, and I'm like,
Well,
I didn't have
Ambassador
the patience.
International, Tony.
Yeah, so.
They like new authors, apparently. I don't know. We'll see.
I do have a few published in
Good,
different
good.
genres and stuff,
And you
so
know
I know
what?
that feeling too.
And I'm not saying, I know a lot of really great writers that self-publish. I think that was just something I was like, I don't know. This, I really felt like I had to stick with God's timing. It was disappointing, though, that it at first. It was disappointing. Now it's not. And looking back, that would be disappointing, I think, to a new author, like 21 years. I don't want to wait that long, but I don't know. And even at this point, and I'm not saying, I totally believe that the Lord wants us to work and put forth effort. So I'm praying, I'm like, show me what you want me to do. It would be nice if it, we'll see.
Yeah,
So.
we as humans have the I want it now mentality, whereas God is like, in
Well, sure.
my time is not
Yep.
your time, so please be patient. Otherwise, I will teach you patience. And
Oh,
God
yes.
has a way of teaching us patience, definitely.
He
So,
does.
what really inspired you? You kind of talked about the pursuit of forensic science. Was there a specific inspiration, like maybe a person or a situation that really inspired you to get into it? Or was it just when you, like you said, the O.J. Simpson trial? Was it just that whole situation, or was there more to it?
I always have loved science, so I've always been drawn to science. I've always been a good student, but it's not just about being a student. And I've always had, I think, an analytical mind. So, quite honestly, I have gone where the doors of opportunity have opened. That's what I've done with my life is, and I am very blessed that the Lord has opened different doors of opportunity. It was O.J. Simpson, his trial finishing, that got me glued to the television of forensics and started learning about it. But I was already in law enforcement. I was working as a police dispatcher and seeing all this unfold. But I think having a love for science, forensics has all kinds of spin-off disciplines that are just so fascinating. You could spend your whole entire life and you would never learn everything there is to learn about all the disciplines in forensics. And one of the things I like to show my students is all the different jobs there are. So a lot of people don't realize it. There's so many different jobs and there's so many different levels of education you can have, and you can contribute to forensics in different ways, and also law enforcement. And there's a lot of different careers and jobs. One of the things I also wanted to say is, I like to tell my students this. I think we're all trying to find that path, right? Whether it's a and I'm talking career path, but because I teach, but it's your path in general. Like, what is my niche? How did God create me? And this is really what I tell young people, my son, students, everybody. I say, God put gifts, strengths, talents in all of us, and he put passions and desires in all of us. The two should mesh together. That's your path. Now, finding that path, it is not a destination. It is a journey, and it is something you will continue to discover throughout your life. And so, as long as you're following the path of passion, desires, and I'm pretty good at this. And then, how do you know if you're good at something? There's a couple of hints. One, it comes to you easier than it does other people, right? And so we don't want to get braggadocious because you could be like, why is that so hard for you? It's pretty easy for me. Well, that's a natural gift when you're seeing other people. It's not easy for them, but it is for you. And of course, we're not good at everything, so we have strengths and weaknesses. And then the other hint, if you're good at something, is you're complimented on it a lot. So I think the trouble with that is, I think we need to be better at complimenting people's strengths, and because a lot of people don't even realize
Yeah.
what they're good at. And so, and that can
Encouragement
be,
is huge.
it is huge and genuine.
Yeah.
So, we've all seen American Idol. You don't want to compliment someone who can't sing, be like, you're great, and they're not. So obviously you don't want to hurt people's feelings, but it should be genuine. And I think as a parent as well, a parent of, a young person, my son just turned 21. I think parents, we really, and this is hard to do, but we really need to step back and not try to force what we want on our children and
Yeah.
really help find the strengths and the gifts that God has put in our children and help them discover those. And it is a journey. And you, Tony, have not discovered all of your strengths yet. You're a pretty talented guy, but you're still going to be throughout your life discovering more of them, and all of us are. And that's the exciting journey, I think, is discovering that. And then God puts people in our path along the way of all that. So it's pretty neat how he uses all of us to, you know, to carry out his purpose. And I think, and I actually know that he loves it when we are living out what he put in us, because it's almost like seeing, you know, sometimes we can really tell when someone's really talented, like an incredible artist, right? Or incredible musician. God gives them that, and then they use it, and then it blesses the rest of us, and we get to enjoy it. But he does that in every so many areas, you know, like justice, criminal justice, a great lawyer that's ethical, you know, a great someone who's going to make sure they're standing on ethics with and letting go of a case if they discover they got it wrong. So we got to, you know what I mean? Like a good lawyer is going to, a prosecutor is going to, once they realize, oh my gosh, we got this wrong, we are not going to prosecute.
We'll
And
dismiss the case or
we'll
whatever.
dismiss the case. Or yeah, a great detective that's going to not let go of the ego and really be unbiased and searching for, you know, who did this? Prove me wrong. Let me try to prove myself wrong so I get the right person. And that's, you know, so there's all industries. We sometimes think, oh, we see how God put his great gifts in people. That's very obvious. But there's all industries that he puts his gifts in, and he takes pleasure in us finding it and living it out. He loves that when we do it. And I think you can feel that too in yourself.
God
So.
is the ultimate artist, and he does think of us all as a precious work of art, that he loves us. And it's amazing when you have kids, because you do, I see the distinct differences between my own two children, and you and we try not to compare them, because we tell them both, like, my son has such a great memory. And if he hears something, he remembers it, and he won't forget it. If he sees something, he won't forget it. And he's like a trap. Like, he just picks up everything. And so even with Lego, when he sees something, he'll disappear into his room and he'll just build it, no instructions, and it'll come out and it'll look exactly like what he just saw. Whereas my daughter, she's like more like building the house type things. And it frustrates my son, because he's like, you can't play with my Lego if you're just going to build a house. And we tell him, we're like, that's her strength. She likes the design aspect of it. Like, that's
How
her,
fun
she's
to see
more
that play
artistic
out.
that way. So we tell him, we're like, so what if she wants to build a house?
You
She's
can be the
artistic.
architect,
She loves drawing and that kind of stuff. She's very artistic that way. And so you see the distinct differences. And so we just have to keep reminding them, like, just let the other sibling be good at what they're good at. Quit trying to critique what the other one does and focus on yourself. Thank you for listening to the Cool Explorations podcast and radio program. I hope that you've enjoyed today's segment, and I hope that you'll consider supporting us at Cool Explorations on Patreon, as well as you can shoot me an email at tpeters745@gmail.com if you'd like to support in other ways other than Patreon.